You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. My guest will be Dr. Joel Fuhrman, and he is the author of so many books, but his latest book that just came out, Eat for Life, is a wonderful breakthrough nutrient-rich program, and we'll be talking about that when he comes on in just a little bit, and I'll tell you more about him then. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in around the news and some ways that you might want to get involved. First off, of course, we all are aware of the crazy times we're living in right now with the coronavirus. It seems like all these events that I normally share with you every week, most of them have been canceled. We are still waiting to decide whether to cancel next weekend's CSA Fair, which we've been planning for a while. CSA, for those of you that don't know, stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And with NOFA New York, which is the Northeast Organic Farming Association, in collaboration with Slow Food North Shore, which is our local slow food chapter, we organized a CSA Fair, which brings over 20 farmers together under one roof to talk about their community supported agriculture programs. And CSAs are really the best way for everyone to get fresh organic vegetables that are in season, that are locally grown by organic farmers that are taking care of the land. And it's a wonderful program. The difference is that many CSAs all offer different things. Some CSAs you have to pick up at the farm. Some CSAs have local drop-off points that are close to your home. They have different hours. Some CSAs have add-on programs like flowers or cheese or fruit. And some CSAs only have vegetables. One of our CSA farmers is just an herb farmer and just gives, you know, has herbs. Some CSAs offer animal products. So you really have to shop around and see which CSA is right for you. Also, some CSAs offer half shares. So if you're a family of one or two, you might not be able to use a whole basket full and you want only a half share. Some of those CSAs offer that as well. So it's a great opportunity. You can go on to the Slow Food North Shore website or Facebook to see what farms we have coming and explore them as well. We have not decided to cancel our event yet, but we are looking into it and discussing it, and we will make a decision soon. I know the Peconic Land Trust that had a whole bunch of series coming up that I was going to share with you, they have canceled. Transition Town Port Washington, which had a whole bunch of films coming up leading up to Earth Day, they've canceled. So and all the other events I have down to share with you, I don't know if they've canceled, so I'm not going to share with you. But if you are interested, on my website at ieatgreen.com, I do list all of the events that I normally share. And you can go onto that website and see the events there and check them out for yourself. What I did do this week that I want to share with you is I went to a rally to oppose the Williams Pipeline. And I've been advertising this for a while, as well as Food and Water Watch and Long Island Progressive Action and Sane Energy. And I was really surprised to get there. I was expecting hundreds of people, and there were really like 40 or 50 of us. And it was a little disappointing to see so few people coming out to talk about such an important thing. As you all know, New York passed the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act last spring, which requires New York State to move towards renewable energies. In fact, they require by law for us to reduce our fossil fuels and install up to 6,000 megawatts of solar by 2025 and 9,000 megawatts of wind energy by 2035. And yet, when I went to this event, which was actually there was a rally before the public meeting, which was being hosted by National Grid. And the purpose of the meeting was National Grid had a whole room with all these beautiful displays set up of all of their proposals of how they're going to offer more energy to Long Islanders for our growing population. And not one of them talked about wind or solar. I was flabbergasted. I could not believe that they were still promoting pipelines and liquid natural gas stations and, you know, so much of this is just for their, or all of it's for their profit. And a lot of the gas that they're importing is also for exporting. So it was really shocking. And so there was opportunities to share your feelings, and of course I did. And I would really like to just encourage all of you listeners out there to come out and, you know, let your voices be heard. National Grid has to be stopped from pushing all these pipelines. Right now there's a pipeline that they, well, this was Con Ed, installed right below the Indian Point power plant. You know, if there's a leak there, you know, goodbye, New Yorkers. So we really need to hold these corporations accountable and learn more about the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act that we passed, and really all step up to the plate to do what we can to move towards renewable energy. Also, as the farm-to-school coordinator at Glen Cove School, I was shocked when they actually closed the school this week because a bus driver tested positive for the coronavirus. But the next day they opened it and then found out that one of the students whose sibling was on the bus tested positive and was in school. And the school was open. And the school is open again today. So I don't know how they are trying to control this whole thing. Supposedly, they were told that they can't keep the student from coming to school because he's asymptomatic. However, I thought if you're asymptomatic, you're still spreading the virus. So I don't really know. But one thing that I do know is that the current administration we have in D.C. is doing everything they can to roll back the standards, the improvements that the Obama administration had put onto school food. And as the farm-to-school coordinator, I can tell you that even the improved school food is not that good. So rolling it back is really bad, and we really just can't let that happen. So please sign the petition that I have on my website to tell the Trump administration to stop weakening school nutrition standards and maintain the whole grains that they added and the fresh fruits and vegetables that they added to the lunch program, and not to go back to French fries and pizza and more sugar and salt. We just know that's not going to help our kids at all. And, you know, the statistics with childhood obesity is still up. The statistics with type 2 diabetes for kids is still up. And we just not need to turn that around. And we're doing such a disservice to our kids, feeding them the crap that we are. So we can do better. Also, Nestle's is at it again. They are trying to drain over 1 million gallons of water a day from a beautiful natural spring in Florida called the Ginny Springs Outdoor Recreational Park. There's a series of 7 natural springs there that are beautiful. They have been, you know, the family that owns it has already been contracting with some water companies, and they have been using some of the water, but it is apparently draining it, and Nestle wants to take an extra 1 million gallons a day out of there. And so there's a big petition also to sign on my website to try to keep them from doing that. And then I want to share with you an article I read that was just so great that opened me up to this new book called Cured, which is by Jeffrey Rediger. I'm hoping to get him on my show one of these days. But he came out with a book called Cured, The Life-Changing Science of Spontaneous Healing. And this article in the Washington Post was just great because it just, you know, gave a little synopsis of the book. But he's basically spent 17 years studying people who have had miraculous cures, who were given, you know, life sentences of, you know, terminal illnesses with cancer or whatever the disease was. And they chose a different path than Western medicine. Many of the times, Western medicine actually just threw up their hands and said, there's no more we can do for you. So they went out and just, you know, started living life. They started eating better. Some people changed their diet to, you know, vegan, all-natural diet. Some people went on the keto diet. Some people did whatever they wanted to do. So diet, you know, made a difference in some of them. But some of them just surrounded themselves with family and friends and got rid of their stress, and the variety of different things that people did. You know, some people brought spirituality into their lives and started meditating. But whatever changes they made in their life, those changes caused them to have spontaneous, miraculous cures. And, of course, Western medicine, you know, has a hard time believing this, but it is, you know, documented here, and it's just amazing what the body can do. So for all those that are dealing with tough situations, just know that you can change it and turn it around. So you might want to check out this book. So now I want to share with all of you this week's recipe, which is a Szechuan vegetable delight. It's basically a stir-fry vegetable dish that I served with some vegetable fried rice. And, you know, I always have a stockpile of vegetables in my refrigerator, so this is what I had on hand. And you can certainly go out and buy these ingredients, or you can use what you have on hand. You know, the vegetables you choose in this recipe are not the end-all. You really can put in what you like and take out what you don't. Anyway, I started with one onion that I cut in half and sliced into crescent moons, three carrots that I cut into small chunks, one head of broccoli that I cut into florets, three small Japanese eggplants, 8 ounces of baby Bella mushrooms, Napa cabbage that I cut up. It was about 2 cups of shredded cabbage when I measured it, one baby bok choy, one orange pepper sliced or diced up into large chunks. Make sure the pepper's organic. That is one of those vegetables on the dirty dozen list. 2 tablespoons grated ginger, 2 tablespoons minced garlic, a little olive oil to coat the bottom of the wok, 3 tablespoons of tamari, 1 teaspoon of dark sesame oil, 1 teaspoon of hot sesame oil, 2 tablespoons aji marin, 1 teaspoon of cornstarch or arrowroot, and cilantro. And you're going to start by covering the bottom of the wok with oil. You can also just stir-fry in water, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that later with my guest, Dr. Joel Fuhrman. You know, you can stir-fry just in water if you'd like. I use a little bit of oil to cover the wok, and then if I need any more liquid after that, I use water as well. So when the oil is hot or the water, you can add the onions and the carrots and stir that up till it starts getting soft. You want to add half of the ginger and garlic to that. You're going to cook that for about 7 to 10 minutes until those root vegetables start getting soft. Meanwhile, in another pot, you're going to steam the eggplant. And I always like to steam the eggplant or roast the eggplant before adding it to my stir fry, because eggplant is one of those vegetables that really need to be cooked all the way through. It tastes much better when they're soft. If there's a bite to the eggplant, it doesn't taste as good. But eggplant also is one of those vegetables that absorbs so much oil. So you do not want to stir-fry eggplant with oil, because it will just soak it right up. So steaming eggplant first before you add it to the stir-fry is a trick I learned a long time ago, and it's just wonderful. So you just steam that until it's soft, and then remove it from the heat. Add the mushrooms to the wok and cook for 5 minutes, then add the broccoli and the remaining garlic and ginger. Continue cooking this at medium-high heat, stirring as needed. Then add the peppers, the napa cabbage, and the bok choy. Add a little water at this time, if anything's sticking, to help deglaze the wok at the bottom. And then in a small bowl, you're going to make a mixture with the cornstarch or arrowroot, the tamari, the sesame oil, and the mirin. Mirin is sweet rice wine, which I love using in my cooking. And pour that over the vegetables and let that cook for a few more minutes, allowing the sauce to thicken. I don't think I said adding the eggplant, but of course add the eggplant into the wok as well. Then add the dark sesame oil and the hot sesame oil, and adjust the seasonings to your preference. You can add some more tamari or hot sesame oil if you desire. I add cilantro because I love cilantro. You can also add parsley if you don't like cilantro. And serve it with your favorite grain, either brown rice, or I made a vegetable fried brown rice with some vegetables in it. Of course, quinoa, any grain that you like you can add. And enjoy. And of course, I'd love feedback, so please let me know how you like the recipe. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Dr. Joel Fuhrman. He came out with this new book, Eat for Life, which is just such a great, great book. And I am so excited to have him on. Dr. Furman is a board-certified family physician, six-time New York Times best-selling author, and internationally recognized expert on nutrition and natural healing. He specializes in preventing and reversing disease through nutritional methods. He's the president of the Nutritional Research Foundation, and he's on the faculty of Northern Arizona University Health Sciences Division. Dr. Furman coined the term nutritarian to describe a nutrient-dense eating style designed to prevent cancer, slow aging, and extend lifespan. And for over 25 years, Dr. Furman has shown that it's possible to achieve sustainable weight loss and reverse heart disease, diabetes, and many other illnesses using smart nutrition. In his medical practice and through his books and television specials, he continues to bring this life-saving messages to hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And I'm so thrilled to have him on with us today. Dr. Furman, you with me?
I am. I'm right here.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us. And I want to start actually by just asking, how did you first discover nutrition as a part of your medical practice or the main part of your medical practice when we all know that nutrition is not what you're being taught in medical school?
Well, I was on the world team in figure skating in the early 1970s. I always was reading nutrition books because my father, who was overweight and sickly, and then, you know, read Dr. Herbert Shelton's works that were written in the 1950s. And he lost weight and got in better health, and I started reading the books in the home that my father ordered and started getting into it when I was a teenager. When I left my skating career and I started working in my family's business in the New York metropolitan area, my father had a shoe store chain. I realized my passion was this concept of getting people well again through nutritional excellence. And I recognized then in my early 20s that medical profession was giving people noxious and cancer-causing drugs to try to mitigate the effects of disease-causing diet styles. And I felt that this career, I would have a niche in being able to help people get well, who would want a more natural approach, would be something that would be growing in the future. And I went to medical school. I applied to medical school and decided to leave my family's business to go back to medical school with the specific intent of being a specialist in nutritional medicine. So I went to the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine in 1984 because I desired this type of career, but never did I dream I'd have, you know, for many years I've worked caring for patients using nutrition, but I never thought I'd have the impact on so many millions of people like I've had today with all my best-selling books and television shows on PBS. And I've just been very grateful and lucky to have a lot of opportunities to communicate this message with the public, being on Dr. Oz and Live with Kelly. So I've had a lot of, you know, so it's just been I'm tremendously, rewarded in an emotional and intellectual sense from having changed the lives of many people who've recovered from lupus, asthma, allergies, fibroids, fibromyalgia, ulcerative colitis, rheumatoid arthritis, reversed heart disease, got rid of their diabetes, saved their life from advanced heart disease. So it's really, I'm so passionate and excited about this work, and I still am, you know, after doing this and being in practice more than 30 years, just because the power of nutrition to get people well is 100 times stronger than what doctors have in their armamentarium with drugs. And to be able to have people come to me or look up my work and learn from me and get their health back is just powerful. And every doctor, and more doctors are doing this because it's so exciting to see the body in action and see that these diseases can be reversed.
Yeah, it's amazing that it hasn't changed the medical profession. You know, I meet doctors all the time because I have a doctor that I'm friendly with who runs the intern program out at Stony Brook Hospital. And so he brings me out to do a whole show, the film, like Forks Over Knives, which I know you're familiar with, and, and then have me do a cooking demonstration with everybody. And it's amazing because he understands, and he's making sure that the interns that are under his supervision are getting that. But they still tell me they still get like 5 hours worth of nutrition education in medical school. How come that has not changed? Any insight into that?
You know, two things. Number one, the medical profession is not, that's not their skill set, and it's not what they profess to be. You don't go to doctors for nutritional information. And you can't, and if you did, if doctors did learn about nutrition, it would still be worthless. Because the time a person goes to a doctor after they have a serious, if they develop these serious diseases, is not the right point in their life to have learned this. You don't wait till a person gets lung cancer to have them quit smoking. Ideally, they should learn about not smoking cigarettes in grade schools. We don't start to begin with. And the same thing is true with nutrition. Doctors know about as much nutrition as lawyers and electricians and and mailmen do. But it doesn't matter because people say, well, how do we get the medical profession to learn more about nutrition? And I'm saying this, we don't need the medical profession. We need all of society to learn more. It should be reading, writing, arithmetic, and nutritional science. It's that every person has a right to learn that they don't have to have heart attacks and strokes, that we have the information today available to win the war on cancer. We don't have to get breast and prostate cancer. We don't have to get demented if we don't want to. And not to take advantage of these advances in nutritional science so we can control our health destiny is insanity. And we don't solve the insanity by just training doctors with this information. We have to train the whole population. So training the person graduating from high school is just as important as training a doctor. You know, so my comment is this preoccupation with having doctors know nutrition is somewhat, I'm thinking, misguided, or at least the emphasis is not correct because, sure, we can reverse people's diabetes and get them well when they're 60 or 70 years old and they get sick, but that's not what a lot of people are dead with their first heart attack. 40% of people with their first signs of having any problem of heart disease is a heart attack, and 40% of them die on the spot when they don't make it to the hospital alive. And they never knew they had heart disease, but now they don't know it because they're dead. But the point I'm making is the same thing is true with many serious illnesses. Right. To find that cancer is detected, it's already too advanced to do much about it. We don't want to wait till we find these advanced diseases so a doctor can say, now you should eat better. We want our population to know when they're much younger that nutritional excellence. And this myth that people say, oh, kill me right now. I'll just shoot me right now if I have to eat that way. I'm not going to live on carrot sticks and celery for the rest of my life. I'd rather be dead anyway. What I'm saying to that is that it's just it shows more profound ignorance, misinformation, because people like what they get used to eating. The recipes taste just as good or better, and over time we've studied this, that people who switch to this nutritarian approach that I'm advocating like eating this way more than their prior diets. They feel great, they age slower, they live with confidence, and they can enjoy their later years without the fear of cancers and heart attacks and things. And it gives people more satisfaction and more enjoyment and even better taste. And so it's not, you're not giving up as much, you know, hardly anything except at the beginning. There's a transitional 6 months where the first few months your taste buds change, adjust, and get stronger. But we're talking about your whole life here. So, you know, I think my new book, which we're talking about today, Eat for Life, you know, I've written 12 books, and I found out last night, while I was lying in bed watching DVRing, watching something on television, I got a text that said my book just became my 7th New York Times bestseller. So my book, Eat for Life, my book that just came out 2 weeks ago, Eat for Life, just last night became a New York Times bestseller. And it just shows that the growth of this movement and the cumulative evidence available today where we don't have to have strokes and heart attacks and dementia, and this information is becoming overwhelmingly and available and non-controversial, irrefutable. The evidence is overwhelming that people can reverse disease. And what makes this book of mine so different is I go through not just the growth of science and this amazing amount of research, but also the hundreds of people in all these cases of serious illnesses that were able to be reversed and showing that the studies support that these individual cases are not just unusual remissions, they're consistently occurring in people who follow this approach. So that what I'm saying is nutritional excellence, when you tweak it to the ideal level to maximize human lifespan so we can live to be, you know, in the 95 to 105 age range, when we use these advances in nutritional science to slow aging and live longer, it becomes extremely therapeutically effective to enable people to recover from serious illnesses. So, for example, I show a guy who got well from, who got ulcerative colitis, was taking these cancer-causing drugs for his colitis, developed testicular cancer. They couldn't treat the testicular cancer because it would have exacerbated his colitis. So he went on this nutritional program, and his ulcerative colitis went away, and his testicular cancer went away without treatment. Both of them were gone. I give one case after another of the power of nutritional excellence to change people's lives and show that there's an enormous amount of scientific support for this today. So it's like I intend this to be my last book, because but I feel that I've gotten all my life's work, into this book in a way that makes it so that it's even going to be penetrate society even in a more effective way even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine the medical profession is actually threatened by the movement of eating healthy, the fact that it is growing so much and, you know, can put them out of business. That would be the hope. I mean, right now, you know, the business of being sick, I mean, you know, is huge. I mean, you know, if you think about starting with the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies and the hospitals and the doctors doing surgeries and, you know, if we all reversed all these diseases, you know, basically, hopefully, it would put them all out of business. So, you know, that could be one reason that they're not helping to promote it. You know, I always say if our government was actually really paying for our health care, then it would be an incentive for them to get us all healthy because, you know, and like you said, you know, really has to start young. You know, I'm in the school now as the farm-to-school coordinator trying to work with the food that the kids are eating, and I saw that, you know, I wasn't making any real impact, and I started going into the health classes just a few weeks ago showing a short, you know, documentary film on our food system, and, you know, and then that I saw how little information they actually are even learning in health class about diet. So, yeah, if we can get the kids when they're young and start teaching them at school, since, you know, so many parents don't know, and they're, you know, so many parents are the ones responsible for feeding their kids such junk. So,
you have to get
a lot of work
right.
to be done.
You have to
a lot of work.
Parents and students at the same simultaneously, and that's, you know, one of the goals for the future. And, you know, it's slowly happening, but of course, you know, I've experienced this my whole career where doctors are incentivized not about going out of business, but to increase their income. They can't really spend that much time teaching people about nutrition, even if they knew it. The conventional medical care involves very little doctor time per patient, and it's not the place where you go to be taught about something as complicated. And food is so addicting, and unless people can learn about how to remove food addiction, and that's where I, you know, I've developed this, you know, I think I'm almost best known for is the explanation of how food becomes addicting and how difficult it is for people to adhere to eating healthfully, and unless they know exactly how to remove and repair their brain from the addictive nature of food, that without addressing that and without enabling people to recover from that, they're not going to succeed in this. And so so what I'm saying right now is we just can't expect doctors to be able to have the skill and training to do this. But of course, they're not going to really, they want to, most doctors make the money from procedures, from surgeries, from seeing lots of, or from seeing large volumes of patients. It's just not, you know. But anyway, so it's, they're not, the medical care is not incentivized. If doctors were paid based on, if they were giving a certain number of people's lives to care for, and their payments were enhanced when people didn't get sick or live longer, then they would be incentivized to treat them differently. But now they're incentivized to make money when people get sick, come in for more visits, and we do more testing on them and more treatments on them and more screening tests and give them more more procedures, that's how they make their money. They make the money from people being sicker, not from people being healthier.
Right. And unfortunately, the same situation exists with nutritionists. Most nutritionists, you go to nutrition school, you know, they're not learning what you're teaching. You know, they're not learning your philosophy. They're learning, you know, the medical profession's nutrition philosophy, you know, which includes a lot of animal products and, you know, eat lean meat. And, you know, they're not talking about eating lots of vegetables, although it might be changing now, but...
Well, those teachings aren't coming. Those aren't coming from the medical profession. Those teachings are coming from. There's this big, you know, there's a tremendous effect with lobbyists and financial incentive for people to follow the recommendations set up by health authorities, based on, because they're in our country, this information is affected by political and social and economic effects of the, you know, people in power, which is the pharmaceutical company and the food industry and the restaurant industry. You know, so they have tremendous effects on what the government is advocating, and then what the government is advocating gets picked up by dietitians and other people who are teaching people about nutrition. So it's very, you're right, it's politically, social, and economically, it's not, and there's a big debate among the scientists and medical nutritionists about how far away government recommendations are from what's ideal, but it has moved in the right direction over the last couple of decades. It's moved somewhat in a better direction, but still tremendously influenced by the food industry than what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's go to what you are promoting. Can we talk about the Nutritarian diet? What makes it so unique?
Well, you know, the question is, is there a gold standard, the pinnacle of excellence that really will enable this, you know, genetic defects not to be expressed, cancers not to occur, to maximize human lifespan? And some people will argue there's not one best diet, because each people are different, and that there's this diet's better for that person and that diet's better for this person. And I'm saying that's not what science has indicated today. There is one best diet. There's a portfolio, and that doesn't mean that people can't be allergic to certain foods or might need minor tweaking of the program, but the principles don't change, and that there's a collection or portfolio of foods that have the most powerful effects on preventing cancer, that support cellular machinery most effectively. And so I'm saying that a Nutritarian diet is not a blue zone diet, because blue zones are living, you know, 5 to 8 years longer on the average than the average American, based on what people eat in their area, based on custom and what's available. But when we take the blue zone diet and, you know, a way step towards further excellence, because we have available a much wider variety of foods that have powerful effects, like wild blueberries and microgreens and sprouts and, you know, and broccoli sprouts. And in other words, we have access to foods with more nutritional power to extend human lifespan than any blue zone had. And we can extend human lifespan, you know, 20, 25 years, not 5 to 10 years. And so a Nutritarian diet starts out with its basis of establishing what is the most lifespan promoting diet style for the human race. And under the basic principle that the only thing ever proven to radically extend human lifespan is moderate caloric restriction in the context of micronutrient excellence. And I explain how, as you rev up the micronutrient content of your diet, not just the amount, but the variety of micronutrients consumed, especially phytochemicals from various types of plants, it naturally suppresses our appetite. And has us desire the right amount of calories, not excessive calories. And I show how when your diet is micronutrient deficient or inadequate, you become a calorie-consuming monster, and you can't control the amount of calories you desire anymore. And then once we establish that the overwhelming science that this portfolio of foods that includes G-bombs, you know, greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, seeds, all these foods that we're trying to incorporate in our diet that have lifespan-enhancing effects, that once we accept the fact there's a tremendous amount of irrefutable data that a diet style revolving around these high-nutrient plants extends human lifespan, then when we use this program on people who have diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, asthma, allergies, you know, autoimmune conditions, lupus and Sjogren's syndrome. And it works therapeutically to arm the body's immune system and self-reparative properties so people can get well and make complete recoveries and remissions of these diseases that they've suffered with for many, many years, and they can get off their medications that cause cancer. So I'm saying I'm giving this approach and saying, well, you know, there is a lot of diets that are advocated for that are better than the way Americans are eating right now, but my niche is to establish what's ideal so that people aren't, you're not selling a person out. Because the minute you start watering down the information to make it more acceptable to what people want to hear or want to eat, then you've taken away a person's opportunity to get well and reverse their disease. Maybe a person wants to maxly get their health back and maxly get their weight off and drop 100 pounds and keep the 100 pounds off for the rest of their life. And when you moderate the program and you weaken it to make it more conventionally acceptable, like a Mediterranean diet, then people don't see any benefit. You know, they were running a Mediterranean diet program in the local hospital, and then they noticed that the people weren't really getting rid of their diabetes, they weren't getting off the blood pressure medications, their heart disease, so they put my program in place instead, and we saw, of course, people dropped an average of 15 pounds the first month, 10 pounds the second month, their diabetes got away, they all became non-diabetic. The point is that when you water down the information, you lose the therapeutic benefits. And then people don't get the magic that they were doing this for. And they don't get the encouragement to want to continue it because they're not seeing the real benefits. They're just making the change and getting nothing out of it. But when you make a change to this degree that I'm requesting, then not only do you see this really happening, but you're losing that stress and always having to make decisions. And you start to get rid of your food addictions and cravings for those things you shouldn't be eating because you abstain from them for a long enough period of time. So you're not craving junk food, craving sugar, craving oil, craving fried foods. You're no longer craving the high salt because you've improved your taste buds and you feel better and you start to prefer these foods. So what I'm saying is it's a very comprehensive program. Anybody could learn about it, could water it down, but my experience of the last 30 years is that the people that do it fully not only get the best results, but they like it better, they enjoy it more, and it becomes the way they prefer to eat, and they no longer feel they're on a diet. They're just eating the way that makes them feel the best, that they enjoy the most. So that's right. That's why I designed it that way, you know?
Right. Yeah, it makes so much sense, and I think addressing the addiction is really right. You've got it there. We're going to take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the recipes you have in the book because they really look great. So everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Dr. Joel Fuhrman about his new book, Eat for Life. Be right back.
It's the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
Stand up, stand up. You've been sitting way too long.
Every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, it's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on BRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from BRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell the story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I'm the host of What Women Must Know, every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. As a naturopathic doctor and psychotherapist, I am always seeking the latest solutions to help you rejuvenate and regenerate your body, mind, and spirit. So join me, Dr. Cheryl, and my inspiring guests, authors, health practitioners, and wise elders to empower yourself by expanding your knowledge about your health and your hormones and to gain fresh new perspectives on life. That's What Women Must Know every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
get ready for an outstanding entertainment program. The Jimmy Dore Show.
The Democrats are a grassroots party the same way Monsanto is an organic food company.
We should do a diet where we just make fun of the Democratic Party. But it's important to respect the dead. And everyone is still saying, you gotta vote for it.
Cause Trump did.
You gotta beat Trump with something. Where's your platform for ending the seven wars Barack Obama got us in? Where's your platform for ending fracking? Where's your f***ing platform?
Every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
God bless you, Jimmy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Dr. Joel Fuhrman, author of the new book, Eat for Life, the Breakthrough Nutrient-Rich Program for Longevity, Disease Reversal, and Sustained Weight Loss. He also has written 11 other books, so this is his 12th book. And he just shared with us it's now a New York Times bestseller. Dr. Joel, are you with me?
I am. I am here and excited to be here.
Good. So I wanted to ask you to share with us some of your favorite recipes, or what would you consider one of your favorite recipes from your book? Because I think having the recipes is also just so amazing, because it's one thing to talk about the diet, but then to really learn how to put it into action is another one. So share with us some of your favorite.
And, you know, In the book, I have, like, menu plans for people to reverse diabetes, to lower cholesterol, to reverse autoimmune disease, for early-stage cancers. In other words, I have, you know, menu plans, shopping lists, and recipes available for different conditions. So the book is, you know, so I want to put everything in there so people will feel, well, which book can I get all this information? So this book is very comprehensive in that respect. You know, I always...
Before you go there, I have one other question I forgot to ask. I know some people who have Crohn's disease, and they say they can't eat any vegetables because of their digestion. How do you transition? Like, I would believe that this diet would fix that too, but how do you first transition through that for someone who says they can't digest any vegetables?
Yes, this is very effective for Crohn's disease. I've had many patients who have made... I just gave an example on my PBS show of this man who got rid of his ulcerative colitis and testicular cancer. But yes, many people have recovered from Crohn's disease. But we do not start them on raw vegetable salads at the beginning until they're healed and until they're at a point where they're even proved enough. So in the initial phases of advanced Crohn's or of... bleeding ulcerative colitis, we don't give them raw food. We give them, we heat up the juices and the smoothies. We heat them a little bit so they're not eating raw. Now, the certain cases of Crohn's disease have strictures and surgical damage to their digestive tract, which is not repairable. You know, so we want to catch the Crohn's before they have that scarring and surgical constrictions from multiple surgeries and things. So, you know, so what I'm saying is that in the early stages, Crohn's is reversible. In the later stages, it could have some irreversible portions to it due to treatments and chronic inflammation. But yes, they can eat vegetables. We just got to puree them and make them in the right form and make them soft and, you know, so nothing gets stuck into the narrow openings there and they have to chew very well. But yes, they can. When they don't eat vegetables, they're even worse off. So, I mean, yes, any disease is going to be helped when you can improve their nutrition. But, you know, Crohn's can be a difficult and complex disease because some people's guts are damaged or get damaged, you know.
Right.
But anyway, so getting back to this concept of, you know, we do want people to eat salad every day. And so I want having a healthy salad dressing is so critical to being able to, you know, get the benefit from this type of diet. And I think one of my favorite dressings is just a simple thing of a peeled navel orange mixed with sesame seeds and some cashews and blood orange vinegar or white wine vinegar and a squeeze of lemon to make an orange sesame dressing. It's so simple, but it's one I use so often because I'll put like kiwi in the salad or strawberry in the salad, or I'll put red onion, I'll mix a little fruit in there with the orange sesame dressing, or I'll sprinkle some lightly toasted sesame on top. So, and I'm, you know, one of my most best rated dressings were the members of my website, the 1,700 recipes on my website, but they're rated by people as to which ones they like the best. And one of the dressings that come out the best is the Nutritarian Caesar dressing, which is a more complicated dressing because that has you know, it has some nuts and seeds in it, like hemp and cashews. Oh, by the way, all these dressings have nuts and seeds as the source of fat instead of using oil, because oil promotes weight gain, and, of course, it stops fat loss, and it's calorically concentrated, whereas nuts and seeds, all the calories are not biologically accessible. Some of those calories pass right through you undigested, and the calories are absorbed so slowly that they're preferentially burned for energy instead of stored as fat. What I'm saying is, when you switch all that oil to the whole food, we're talking about walnuts, not walnut oil, sesame seeds, not sesame oil. You know, we're talking about the whole food. It has a completely opposite biological effect with profound benefits on lifespan and weight. So that's why these dressings are incredibly different. Like, here's a Caesar dressing that has roasted garlic, celery, lemon, hemp, cashews, a little bit of low-sodium miso, a little Dijon mustard, dates, and nutritional yeast, and some, you know, and some kelp granules. It's a little bit more complicated. I don't expect people to get it on this discussion. It's a little more complicated dressing, but people love that dressing. We make these dressings like you make one dressing, you might use it for 3 or 4 days and then make another one. We're not like making a new one every day.
Right.
One of my favorite soups is like the sweet and sour. Like, I make a sweet and sour cabbage and split pea soup where I get the sweet from the prunes and a little bit of Granny Smith apples mixed in with the split peas and the lentils and the carrots and the, you know, the barley and the cabbage in there. And then I put the sour in by putting a little bit of, you know, we just put a little bit of like apple cider vinegar to make the sourness into the soup too. Like, so it has a combination of little prunes blended in and a little apple cider vinegar. In this particular soup, we have a lot of, you know, herbs and things and a little bit of walnuts that are chopped in and put a little for texture. So it's really a delicious soup. And then one of my most favorite dishes I probably make the most at my house is probably like a Thai vegetable stir fry or a Thai vegetable curry, where we might throw in, snow pea pods, water chestnuts, bamboo shoots, shredded cabbage, shiitake and button mushrooms, you know, whatever, baby greens or Chinese cabbage, whatever we're putting in there. Then we make an incredible sauce. And again, the sauce is not made with oil. We water wok the vegetables, and then we make the sauce by using the secret ingredient is a stalk of lemongrass, where we remove the tough outer segment, and then we soak it, and we blend the whole lemongrass, chop it and blend it in with the coconut milk and the shredded coconut, a little date for sweetening, the ginger, the basil, a little bit of coconut aminos, and Thai green or red curry paste. We make this incredible, we call G-Bomb Thai vegetable curry on page 324 in the book. That's one of my favorite recipes. I make at home a lot because I love that sauce, you know what I mean? And I also have the make available people, you know, some of these sauces and dips in jarred forms on my website for people who don't have time to make them on their own, who need to buy, make it quicker. We want to remove people's obstacles to where they say time is the obstacle, I don't have time to cook, but we're showing them they can make incredibly delicious food. Even crispy onion rings is another favorite, where instead of frying in oil, we took the sliced onions and we dipped them in a mixture of, like, we coated them with a very thin coating of almond butter and then dipped it in almond flour, that, you know, a little coconut aminos, a little balsamic vinegar, nutritional yeast, and then we baked them in the oven at 350. You know, so they have this incredible flavor. They're crispy, they're flavorful, but they're not fried, and there's no oil in them, so they're not fattening, you know.
Wow.
So, yeah, well, so these are recipes that people really feel that they're enjoying this way of eating while they're watching their diabetes go away and watching them drop. You know, and I'm saying the average person, every person is different, but the average person loses about 15 pounds, who's overweight, who's significantly overweight, loses about 15 pounds the first month and 10 pounds the second month, and then 8 pounds a month thereafter, where you're usually saying that we want people to lose about 2 pounds a week and keep up the rate of 2 pounds a week of weight loss if they're significantly overweight. And I have a retreat in San Diego. It's open all year, where people who are food addicted and who have medical conditions, they actually come and stay there for 2 or 3 months. So I can take care of them and reverse their and wean them off their medications and get rid of their medical problems. And we send them home with the knowledge and ability to keep, if they're overweight, they can go home and they keep that 2 pounds of weight loss going per week when they get home, because we want to make sure that that's what they're getting back to, you know, their health again and not gaining weight back again and going off the probe, and you have to stay with this for the rest of your life. What I'm saying right now is that the reason why going away to health retreats and these programs or places where they feed you super healthy don't usually work is because people don't stay there long enough. And even when they go there and drop some weight and eat healthier, they inevitably, or 90% of the time, they go back home and they start eventually eating back the food they were eating to begin with, and the weight comes back and they get sick again. You can't get better in just a week or two. A lot of people who are food addicts need to abstain from their food triggers for longer periods of time to no longer crave those foods and to learn the psychological skills and the cooking skills, and then retrain their taste buds. So they now have the ability to remove those obstacles that have impeded their progress in the past or prevented them from sticking with it. And so we take a person and work with them, and then we don't see the recidivism weight. Our chances are like 90% they're going to stick with it and continue to benefit as they go home. So the combination of my teaching materials, the availability of the educational information, and even for those people who maybe can't do it on their own, the fact that we have a place they can go to have this, where they can succeed, make sure they succeed, and where it's enforced on them, so they have to abstain from the junk, and we can make all the fresh vegetables there in the gardens and things. So it enables me to really be able to not feel that there's not a person I can't help. I can get, if they want to get healthy and they're committed, they can get their health back.
Uh-huh. And do you incorporate teaching them how to cook, or are you just preparing the food? Because I think that's one of the keys, is really giving people the skills so that they can go home and cook for themselves.
100%, of course. You know, we have food addiction therapists there. We have three incredible chefs that do cooking classes. The people were all the time, they're watching the chefs cook, but there's, of course, set aside times for specific cooking classes. They get my instruction. They get exercise trainers, they get water aerobics, we have a sand area to walk on the, we have all the things that people need to get well. And some people come just to eat the delicious food, the food is like incredible. But most people that go there are people that have significant issues and are significantly overweight and who've had trouble doing it on their own. So they know when they come to a place like this, they can learn the skills, retrain their taste buds, and don't underestimate how they change emotionally when they're there, because they become different people. They start to really enjoy the food. They become grateful for it. They become less angered and more at peace, and it's just amazing. They always say the mental fog lifts. They can think more clearly. They become more creative, and they're so grateful for their time spent there to the facilitate the recovery. I'm so excited. I'm always excited about watching people make the transformation and get their health back. And then I develop these relationships with these people where they've become like different people, and they become like superpowered. These people are now like have a positive effect on other people because they've turned their own health around, and then they become role models. So it's very empowering and exciting to see this happen.
Now, how many people are at a retreat at a time?
Well, don't forget, I have my, getaways and vacations that we go with people just for a week that we may take large numbers of people. But in my San Diego facility, which is open 306, which is open all year and people are staying there a long time, we can only take a very limited number of people. We don't have more than, 15 or 20 people there a month.
Uh-huh. Right. That would make sense. Wow, that is exciting. That is exciting that someone has a place to go, or that, because there's, of course, if someone really has a weight problem and they want to go to lose weight, most of the weight loss places are not also teaching about health. It's a very different environment.
Yes, it's not sustainable. We want to give something that people can stick to. And that's my argument all the time that, we have to give studies more credence that look at large numbers of people long term over decades and look at hard endpoints like death and see, you can eat a keto diet or even a cookie diet, and just because it looks like you lost some weight in the short term looking at soft endpoints, if you follow these people out for decades, they die young and they have a higher rate of cancer or heart cardiovascular deaths when they follow these fads that cut out carbohydrate and give them more more animal products. So they cut out, or they just give them oil, coconut oil and avocado, and they cut out all the fruits out of it. So what I'm saying is that even though vegetables are the most cancer protective food, It's the scientific literature still shows that the mixture of fruits and vegetables is more cancer protective than even just vegetables alone, and that the more variety and assortment of high nutrient plants we incorporate in the program, it has beneficial effects. We want to widen the choice of foods, not narrow it in the plant kingdom. So what I'm in the natural foods, but in any case, what I'm saying right now is that there's a lot of, you know, people with misinformation and confusing information, and they're bombarded by things that confuse them. Otherwise, everybody would be doing this, you know?
What about the information of mixing fruits and vegetables? You know, there's, you know, for a long time there was, you know, a diet where you ate fruit, but yeah, then you had to wait 30 minutes before you could eat vegetables, and that you're not supposed to mix fruits and vegetables. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that started with Herbert Shelton in the 1950s, wrote the book Food Combining Made Easy, and then the Diamonds, who wrote the book Fit for Life in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, advanced that, got a popular book in those days. But no, that's been disproven. It was a theory that they had back then that the stomach was acidic when you eat a protein and stays alkaline when you don't have protein, and that the acidity halts the digestion of carbohydrates. So those were theories which were shown to be untrue, and we know now that actually is a benefit to having more variety, even the same meal. When you, for example, eat nuts with the meal, it increases the absorption of the anti-cancer nutrients from the green vegetables. When you put berries it's better not to have the fruit alone. It's better to have it mixed, because when you eat the glycemic fruit with the low glycemic vegetables, it lowers the glycemic effect of the meal based on the number of calories you take in. So there's benefits to not doing that. We want to eat less frequently, have more variety in the meal, and food combinations, and that old natural hygiene food combination theory is not what we're advocating today.
Uh-huh. Cool. Thank you for sharing that. So we're just about out of time. Can you please share with my listeners how they can get in touch with you and find out more information about the Eat to Live retreat if they're interested in that?
Yeah, the easiest way is to go on drfuhrman.com, which is drfuhrman.com. There's a retreat, you know, tab there. And, of course, my Eat for Life book just came out like 2 weeks ago, or just this month is out for the first time, and it's obviously the probably best place to get it is on Amazon, you know, or some other, you know, online retailer where you can get it. So some people like an ebook, or some people like an audio book, and other people like the real hardcover book. You know, the best place probably to go is there to get it the quickest, you know.
Right, right. Well, thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule to join me today. I so much appreciate it, and I'm sure all my listeners who are listening in and those that will be checking it out on podcast all appreciate it. So thank you so much. Thanks for your work. I've heard you, you know, speak many times, and thank you for everything you do.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck, of course, to you, and great health to all your listeners.